Oh, you didn't know? We're back! It's me, Dave Thackera. We're doing chronology once again. This time, episode 16 of WWF's Monday Night Raw. We go episode by episode from the very beginning until they stop making them. And as we've discovered, not even a global pandemic can stop them from making them. So we'll be here a while. That guy over there with a brand new microphone, his name is Neil Trauma. Hi, Neil.
Hey, Dave. I mean, I think we're doing pretty good. We're on episode 16, and I mean, there have only been like 1,300 or so episodes, so I mean, we're getting there.
Yeah, especially because of the events of the last month and a half in our personal lives, and we haven't recorded one of these in a while. We're sure to get all the episodes done.
Oh, without a doubt. I have no doubt in my mind.
Well, listen, in the wrestling world, way back when, in 1993, where are we? Let's just give a brief recap so we can all be on the same page.
All right. Well, I mean, everybody listening to this should have heard us more recently than we heard each other. So hopefully everyone still remembers that we are in the buildup to King of the Ring 1993. Qualifying matches are rolling. We're going to see one tonight on the show that we're going to review. And we're getting ready to build up to the first new pay-per-view the WWF has introduced since the Royal Rumble in 1989. It's exciting. I think these shows feel like they've got just a little bit of extra oomph in them. Rob Bartlett is gone. We've settled into a format, I think, but there's still enough random stuff happening on these shows that it kind of feels like a must-watch show. I think these shows are getting better, and I think the WWF is getting more exciting. What do you think?
I tend to agree. I think, much like you said, we're a couple dozen episodes, 16, but it seems like longer after a few of them. We're in it now. So like you said, they're finding their groove. They're figuring out what worked and what didn't, and he's gone. So it's just a much more enjoyable show than it has been, and I'm glad.
Yeah, and I mean, speaking of not working, Hulk Hogan is currently our WWF champion, and that is obviously not working. It was ridiculous. We knew it from the minute we watched King of the Ring, or not King of the Ring, WrestleMania 9. We knew it from the minute we saw it on that show that this was going to be a massive failure, and it has been. We haven't even seen the Hulkster since WrestleMania, but other than that, we've got Shawn Michaels being focused on the shows as Intercontinental Champion. He's almost like the de facto Raw champion at this point, getting his second like big match 2 weeks in a row here. And we still got Money Inc., who are kind of the MVPs of the early Raw shows, roaming around as tag champs. But Dave, buddy, we got to start building up these baby faces to challenge these heel challengers. So we'll see where it goes from here in the spring of 1993.
Yeah, let me take you back. Put yourself in a mental place. Put yourself way back when in 1993 itself. This episode aired on May 10th, 1993. As you know, Neil, that was exactly one day after Juan Carlos Wasmosy became the first democratically elected president of Paraguay in nearly 40 years.
Who doesn't know that?
Yeah. It was also the birthday, the actual birthday he popped out of his mom on this exact day, of Spencer Fox. Do you know the name Spencer Fox?
I do not. Should I?
Spencer Fox, you might not have seen him before, but you've definitely heard him before. Spencer Fox is an American actor / voice actor. He was the voice of Dash from the Incredibles movies on Pixar.
Ah, all right.
But we're back in the wrestling world once again. Macho Man is back in the silver and black. Raiders fan till the end. It's got words and logos on it. Kind of look like he's wearing a big old newspaper. But when the episode jumped off from the very beginning, to me, it reminded me of ECW, right? HBK's cutting this promo, and all of a sudden, bam, he's attacked by Mr. Perfect outside. And then an Oldsmobile completely gets trashed. Like, I watched a couple of random ECW shows back in the day, and that's exactly the kind of thing that happens. They're outside in the parking lot. There's fans being held back by security. Someone's talking, and then, oh my God, he's thrown into a car.
And you might not even realize this, Dave, but it has more of an ECW feel than you possibly realize. New listeners to the show might not know that our shtick here, our gimmick, is that I have seen all of these old WWF shows a bazillion times. And Dave is kind of living them for the first time. He's the casual fan, and I'm the hardcore fan here. And Dave, the Hammerstein Ballroom, where ECW had many of their events and bigger shows, literally is the Manhattan Center. So
what?
The street in front of the Manhattan Center literally is where those old ECW shows and interviews that took place outside the Hammerstein Ballroom would have happened. Same street, same building in New York City, right down the street, by the way, from Madison Square Garden, should you ever find yourself in Midtown Manhattan again, which I certainly hope to do very soon because I really, really miss New York. But yeah, Hammerstein Ballroom, not the same room in the Manhattan Center where these Raws are taking place. The Manhattan Center has a number of ballrooms. The Hammerstein where ECW ran was a different room than the theater where WWF was running Raw, but same building.
Well, that's cool. Well, the interview itself was talking up the main highlight of the episode, the Lumberjack match, which is the thing that got Vince McMahon completely erect for about a week and a half as they're talking about it here on Raw.
It wasn't so much the match as it was the Lumberjack shirts, I think, yes, that he had a particular hard-on for here. But yes, the Lumberjack match is coming up. And Shawn Michaels, he's calling out, you know, he's doing his interview outside the building. And you mentioned the Oldsmobile that gets smashed, Dave. That was, in fact, Howard Finkel's actual car.
No, stop it.
I don't know if it was a rib. I don't know if they told Fink that they were going to destroy his car. But yes, that was the Fink's car that was destroyed outside of the Manhattan Center. I'm just loaded with facts today.
That is so outstanding. I'm so happy that we're talking about this. But the Lumberjack match, not only going to feature HBK and Hacksaw Jim Duggan, ho, legally required. We're required to do the ho after every time we say his name. But like actual named superstars are going to be outside the ring with like Yokozuna, recent heavyweight champion, Mr. Perfect, title contender all over the place. It's not just like the Brooklyn Brawler and five guys named Mike Smith. Like these are actual superstars that are going to be outside the ring in Lumberjack shirts. It's going to be pretty cool.
You're right. I mean, we also have the likes of Iron Mike Sharp and the Red Rooster out there. But yes, right, Yokozuna and Mr. Perfect will be part of it as well.
I'm trying to build up interest, okay? I'm trying.
In case somebody changes the channel to AEW or something, to an AEW podcast, we don't want to lose them.
Match number one from episode 16 of Raw took on Bam Bam Bigelow and Typhoon. Now, this is not...
How could anyone change the channel during this one?
Not just a match between two big men. This was a King of the Ring qualifying match. Oh, the action. It was over 700 pounds of man flesh, not even counting the referee, in the ring at one time. And these guys were moving. They were hitting the ropes pretty hard. This to me, in my notes here that I wrote down, I said the show shouldn't be sponsored by Ico Pro. It should be sponsored by the Home Depot, because whoever built this ring did a hell of a job.
Yeah, we really did need Gorilla Monsoon out there to remind everyone that they had to reinforce the ring before this match happened, because that was one of his famous catchphrases all the time in a match like this. And I think, though, for the true early 90s feel, Dave, I think the sponsor should have probably been Slim Fast, but I digress.
Or Jenny Craig, yeah. Bam Bam getting a big push just from the spots and the movement he's put in. Like, you can tell Vince was actually a Bam Bam fan. And he ends up getting the win. So congratulations to Bam Bam moving on.
Your buddy, your former radio partner, Bam Bam, moving on.
That's a week of my life I want back.
What was the weight loss program? What was the one with Sally Struthers? Was that Jenny Craig?
I think that might have been Weight Watchers.
Weight Watchers?
What was the one with the shake? Like Miracle Shake?
Well, the shakes were Slim Fast. They were the ones you bought in the store.
All right, that's probably the one.
Yeah. I don't remember. Sally, she was all over the place in the 90s. Wasn't there a charity that she was part of too? Was that the like Feed the Children Fund? Remember? Because remember the commercial was always call and tell them you want to donate to the one Sally Struthers talks about? Am I just imagining this or did this all happen in the 90s?
This probably happened. This does not, my research does not include any one of these. But as soon as we can learn more about Sally Struthers, we will. And I promise you that at some point in the next few episodes, I'll figure out a way to make a Suzanne Summers Thighmaster reference somewhere in there as well.
All right. Make it happen, man.
All right. Well, after the match is over, and it was a genuinely, objectively pretty good big man match, we got Neil's favorite thing in the universe, a smoking guns promo. Oh, yeah.
Yes. They're so terrible. They're awesome. You got the music. You've got the fake guns. You've got their ridiculous stashes. Gotta love the guns.
Don't get me wrong. I'm like a fan of Billy Gunn's work with the New Age Outlaws and DX, and I can't wait to actually see him in the ring. But if you told me, if I genuinely didn't know anything that was happening on Raw from here on, and you just told me we were just going to get another promo week after week and we'd never see these guys in the ring, I think I'd be fine with it.
I love the Guns, man. 30 years later, friggin' Billy Gunn is still wrestling.
Attaboy. Proud of you, Mr. Ass.
I mean, I'm looking actually at the list of people on this show. The majority of them are dead, let alone still wrestling.
Right.
Speaking of which, what a terrible segue, but it's Yokozuna time.
Speaking of dead wrestlers, match number two, Yokozuna taking on a man named PJ Walker. Now, again, we don't need to tell you who wins this match because it's Yokozuna versus PJ Walker. But before the match even started, we learned that we get more Yokozuna in our lives next week as he meets Kamala, the Ugandan giant, right here on Raw. Oh, yeah.
It was like they thought, you know what'll be better than the match tonight with two fat guys? If we do a match with two fatter guys that are also horrible racial stereotypes.
Stay tuned till next week. Now, I know this is a squash match, but I like the concept of a squash match featuring Yokozuna because dude literally splashes and then sits on a guy. It's literally, I'm squashing you.
I think it was a just incredible squash.
I don't even know what that means.
You weren't paying attention, man.
Fair enough.
PJ Walker, the future ECW Just Incredible, who would have quite a few matches at the Hammerstein Ballroom Manhattan Center. Yes.
See, if we recorded these more often, I would have been all over that reference.
A Just Incredible squash for Yokozuna. Speaking of incredible, King of the Ring report time, right?
King of the Ring report sponsored by Ico Pro, still a sponsor, hard to believe. We find out that when the upcoming King of the Ring, Bret Hart is going to be the number one seed. Lex Luger, Razor Ramon, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, all of the names of the WWF are going to be there. It's an 8-man bracket. I thought it was going to be a 16-man bracket, but no, it's an 8-man bracket, which means that there are only a couple of spaces left in the tournament, and we'll find out who will be represented in that tournament with a couple of truly legendary matches.
Oh, yes. I mean, you know what, though? Here's the thing. This tournament, I definitely remember being really good. And so far, I've been thinking, like, these qualifying matches, it's so obvious who's going to win. Now, obviously, with the benefit of, like, 30 years of hindsight, it's more obvious. But at least these next two that they announced tonight are a little bit more in question. Like, you throw Bam Bam Bigelow in there with Typhoon. You've got Bam Bam, a guy who's being pushed as a monster heel against half of a tag team that doesn't even exist anymore because the other guy already quit the company. Like, who do you think is going to win and go to the King of the Ring tournament? But at least these next week, we've got Tatanka and Giant Gonzalez. Gonzalez is horrible, but they're obviously pushing him in a big feud with The Undertaker, and he's still never been pinned. And Tatanka's doing an undefeated gimmick. So that match is in question. And in fact, I don't even know how they got out of this, because I can't imagine them beating Gonzalez. I assume that Tatanka wins by countout. Oh, yeah, spoiler, Tatanka is the one that goes to the tournament, not Gonzalez. But I'm not even sure how that they get out of that. And at least Doink and Mr. Perfect are two pushed stars. So Tatanka and Giant Gonzalez, Doink and Mr. Perfect are the two matches coming up this weekend. And I would say those results are kind of in question for the King of the Ring.
If you have a hint of who's going to win, at least it's going to be an interesting match and a surprise and not just a 10-second squash. We get match number three. Mr. Perfect, again, a named WWF superstar. He's got his own entrance theme and music. He's going to win the match, taking on Iron Mike Sharp. This was a complete waste of everyone's time. It's just, I'm out. Did you see what happened before the match that just truly grossed me out?
The gum thing?
Mr. Perfect always has gum walk into the ring, usually just spits it in the air and smacks it away. All right, cool, it's a gimmick. But this time, before the match started, he took his gum out of his mouth, gave it to the overweight Raw ring girl, and she started chewing it. Now, I know maybe not much saliva sticks on a piece of gum, and I know that actually kissing someone, it probably exchanges more germs, but this grossed me out to the nth degree. I couldn't get past this. I was shaking for minutes.
I think it's your COVID brain, Dave, doing that to you. I mean, it all looks different in a post-COVID world.
Yeah, I guess so. All right. Anyway.
Terrible match, though.
It was a gross match. It was a gross start to the match. It was a gross finish for the match. Even for the usual assortment of losers we see on Raw, Iron Mike Sharp, He's pretty sad and pathetic. Now, my favorite point of the match was towards the end where Iron Mike actually looked like he was beating up Mr. Perfect. Some pretty stiff, stiff chops. And Perfect has this look on his face like, is this guy doing this? Is he for real right now? And then he got super pissed and started smacking him back.
I mean, Iron Mike was always pushed in the upper echelon of the jobbers. Like, even, like, back in the day, like, he would sometimes get competitive matches against really low-level guys and, like, house show openers. They always liked Iron Mike a little bit more on those Northeast shows than your average jobber. But I never got it. I never saw anything in Iron Mike sharp. I mean, he sort of had the look as, like, you know, generic wrestler that would be in a movie or something. But, yeah, I never really got him in the ring. And thankfully, at this point in his career, he is just a complete jobber, and we're done with him pretty quickly. Speaking of jobbers, can you believe what they're doing to the Lightning Kid, Sean Waltman? Man, the Lightning. Oh, I'm sorry. This week the Cannonball Kid. This week, the Cannonball Kid.
Last week, Sean Waltman was the Kamikaze Kid. This week, he's the Cannonball Kid. But
you believe Vince signed him just to use him as a jobber? I cannot believe they brought him into the company and they're not going to push him. I am mad. I am going on Twitter in 1993 and complaining.
Well, regardless of what his name is, he's facing a man named Mr. Hughes, the very, very large African-American man with a business suit and tie and sunglasses who never takes them off. And now he's with Harvey Whippleman. And we know this is a big deal because they told us about it at length, how shocked they were that Harvey Whippleman has teamed up with Mr. Hughes.
Yeah, it's a big deal, all right. I mean, when you sign Harvey Whippleman to be your manager, you're going straight to the moon, Cameron Grimes style, straight to the moon, Harvey Whippleman. Yeah. I did a little research on Mr. Hughes, by the way, not to spoil anything, but he only appears like two more times on Raw, so let's not get too invested in Mr. Hughes.
Oh, come on. You can't tell me these things. Now I'm disappointed in the fact that they squashed X-Pac with a dude that would no longer be with the company very soon. All right. Well, listen, during the match, because the match was crap, but during the match, because these episodes are on USA Network, they had to read a USA promo for a USA Network original movie. And it's Vince McMahon saying the words, and again, I wrote it down so as to not get the quote wrong. This Wednesday, right here on USA, you don't want to miss an ex-call girl and an ex-con team up to catch a thief. Don't miss Sex, Love, and Cold Hard Cash, a USA world premiere movie. Now, Neil, I don't know if you have access to the Internet Movie Database like I do.
I am acutely aware of its existence, yes.
Fair enough. It stars Joe Beth Williams and Tony Dennison, and I got to tell you that I spent more time looking up who Joe Beth Williams is, who Tony Dennison is, much more things about Sex, Love, and Cold Hard Cash than I did any research for any other part of this podcast today. And I can proudly report that it's just kind of a crappy movie. Hold on. I had this up.
I mean, should I know either of them or either of them in The Incredibles?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. So I have access to IMDb, and I can report that this movie has a 5.1 out of 10 star rating.
That's 3.1 higher than I figured.
The average voter on IMDb gave it a 5.1 rating, but there's 9 votes out there that rated it 10 out of 10 stars.
Well, that's the director and his immediate family, obviously.
73 people voted on this movie. 12.3% of them said it was a 10 out of 10 movie. I can't believe that it was reserved for USA Network television and didn't sweep all the Oscars that year.
Yeah, me too.
Now we get to the main event, Neil. What we came out of the woodwork to see, the reason why the Fink's Oldsmobile was smashed to pieces, the Lumberjack match.
And as promised, all the geeks come out wearing their lumberjack shirts, except I must note Yokozuna, who is both too big a star to come out in the geek lumberjack shirt. And let's be honest, they probably just don't make lumberjack shirts in that size.
Other than a tablecloth and buffalo plaid, you're absolutely right. There's no way they could have found a shirt that large. Just saying. The match came, I mean, for gimmick matches, it wasn't horrible, right?
No, it's fun. Hey, Sean's a workhorse here at this point in 93. Like, spring of 93, Sean is, like, on fire. He's great at bumping around for a big dude like Duggan who can do his big fists of fury and ho! And
ho!
It is what it is. Sean, he does the crutches routine, tries to get out of the match. Mr. Perfect throws him in the ring, and he's got to fight the match in his street clothes, mind you. And, you know, they do their thing, and Duggan, in the end, is an idiot and costs himself the match because he needs to antagonize Yokozuna before the match like a dumbass, who then later in the match just gives him a leg drop and squashes him on the concrete, and he ends up losing the match. Duggan, nobody to blame but himself. And Shawn Michaels blaming Mr. Perfect for getting involved here, so their feud continues. Overall, it accomplished everything it needs to do, I think. Shawn stays the champ. Mr. Perfect is obviously his next big challenger. And Hacksaw Jim Duggan comes out of it all looking like a moron. So I think it's a win-win-win.
Now, you mentioned that Shawn Michaels was wrestling in his street clothes. So this is my favorite part of the podcast, Neil. This is, let me ask you something. Shawn Michaels, in his street clothes, came out to the ring in a generic WWF shirt. It had pictures of the Ultimate Warrior on it. It had pictures of the Road Warriors on it. Now, obviously, at this point, in 1993, Hulk Hogan got his own trademark gear. It's the yellow shirt with the red lighting. And everyone else kind of wears their own, like, wrestling gear. But this was a wrestler coming out to the ring in a wrestling t-shirt, and it wasn't even his. So my question for you, Neil, is when did all the in-ring merchandising begin? The John Cena, not only am I wearing this t-shirt right now, but kids, you can buy it for sale in the lobby for $29.99. Like, when did that really start?
I mean, Cena really made a big deal out of it. I will tell you that, with constantly changing the colored shirts, and they were such a big thing. But I would say that, I mean, first of all, let's say wrestling merchandise, it existed for years and years and years. Obviously, you can always buy shirts of wrestlers. But you're right, I never really paid attention to the fact that for the most part, other than Hogan, they didn't actually come out wearing the right stuff that was sold. I would say it's probably the 90s and the Attitude Era where actually wearing wrestling shirts became at least somewhat culturally accepted. Stone Cold Steve Austin in the Austin 316 shirt is probably the one you could point at where, like, that's something you would actually see. Like, you mm-hmm. would go to the grocery store and someone might be wearing it. Like, it's actually acceptable to wear one. And of course, he wore it all the time, and he would change up his shirt. And whenever he changed up his shirt, people started wearing the new shirt. So I think the answer to your question is really the Attitude Era. But certainly as things became more and more corporate, I'm sure there were more and more meetings where the head of the merchandising department said, you know, we really need a boost to, you know, this guy's shirt. Can we get Jericho to go out there wearing his new shirt for the next 2 weeks and he'll do it? And I'm sure as it's gone on years and years, it's become more, you know, more pronounced and more calculated. But I think the short answer is that, you know, back in the day, honestly, the wrestlers, in their own minds at least, and in their presentation on TV, were too big a stars to be wearing their shirts. Wrestling t-shirts are worn by geeks. You know, Tom Brady doesn't go out on the field in a Buccaneers t-shirt. He goes out in his Buccaneers jersey. You know, t-shirts are for all those marks in the crowd. I think it kind of all, you know, it's kind of that mentality here. But I will tell you an interesting wrestling merchandising story, since that's what this part of the show is all about. Back in the day, when they had the WWF merchandising catalog, they would sometimes want to refresh the mailing list of who they sent this thing to. So if you remember the famous storyline in 1990, where Earthquake squashed Hulk Hogan, and then for months on TV, they encouraged fans to send Hogan a get well card and give you the address to send it to. That was all a gimmick so that they could take the return addresses off the get well cards and use it to update their catalog mailing list.
Oh, come on.
And this is done all the time in wrestling. Whenever a babyface was hurt and the fans were encouraged to send letters of support or send get well cards, that is what the promoter was doing, was finding out who to send, you know, the ticket flyer to or the merchandise catalog. And they're all a bunch of carnies, Dave.
Oh, okay. See, right now you've completely destroyed my my mental image of the wrestling business being just completely pure and untainted.
And on the up and up, right?
And on the up and up.
All right. Well, that's this show, right? Do you have anything else?
No. Let's just get to our MVP of the episode. Who you got?
So I actually looked, and apparently I haven't updated the MVP list for myself in a long time, which means now I'm going to have to go back and listen to like 2 months of our shows to figure out who I voted for. But I'm going with Yokozuna tonight for not being a geek and wearing a lumberjack shirt, and for leg dropping Hacksaw Jim Duggan, which is always bonus points in my book. So I'm going with Yokozuna here for coming off as the biggest star on the show. Although, I mean, Shawn Michaels is probably a close second. He did get thrown through an Oldsmobile window.
He is my choice. He started the episode by destroying a car. He ended the episode by destroying a WWF legend in Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Oh, and he is my MVP of the week.
Yeah, and that's certainly a fair vote. I think I'm falling into the thing where, you know, I just want to vote for someone to be funny. And I'm pretty sure that we're going to see Shawn Michaels enough times on this show that I'll vote for him quite a few more times for the MVP award.
Fair enough. This has been Chronology. Episode 16. Hope you stick around for episode 17 when we get to it, I don't know, before Christmas?
Well, we'll get to it soon, Dave, because, you know, they didn't do their preview of next week, I don't think, except for earlier in the show mentioning the Yokozuna Kamala match. But other than that, let me tell you, next week is a really famous Raw. So
really?
it's going to be a fun show. It is the biggest Raw we've done since the first Raw. I'll tell you that much.
Oh, wow.
So it's a memorable show. So we'll get to that. And we'll be
back. You know what this means, right? Show.
What?
This means it deserves a Raw After Dark treatment with a couple of bourbons in my hand.
Oh, it may. It may. Although, do we reserve those for the truly terrible shows? Maybe a discussion to have off the air. But either way, the next Raw is a good one. So can't wait to talk to everybody next time. Find us, placetobenation.com in the pro wrestling feed and all your usual Spotify and podcasting sources you can find in Chronology. Like us on Facebook as well. I'm Neil. He's...
Dave, did you forget my name? I'm Dave.
Dave, I was throwing it to you. Isn't that what we call it in the business? I was throwing it to you. It's because you usually do that. I usually don't take the ending. That's why we screwed it all up. All right, goodbye. Chronology. See you next week.